Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here with our very special guest, Dr. Janet Smith Warfield, the author of Shift, Change Your Words, Change Your World. And first of all, welcome back, Dr. Warfield.
Well, thank you so much.
Right before the break, the thought was about people seeing something, and you gave the example of looking at the dual image, or the image, I should say. It's not a dual image, but it's people's perception, whether they see the young, beautiful woman or the old hag. And I know there's a vase also made famous, and you're either looking at a vase or you're seeing two people about to kiss nose to nose. And it's one of those two that we see depending on our perspective. And you see a lot of these in psychology classes and psych classes of all kinds, or theories of persuasion, or whatever type of class that you would get to. But it's that type of setting, or it's that type of realization that comes to mind when it's pointed out to us. How much of that is from nurture, and how much is from nature? Can you tell? And again, I'm not expecting you to have a study at your side and to pull out statistics or anything like, but can you tell a lot about a person whether they see the old hag or whether they see the young, beautiful woman? Is that optimism, pessimism, or is it just the part of the brain we're using? What's your thought on that?
Well, first of all, yes, I can tell a huge amount about how a person sees the world, and optical illusions are great analogies to the real world. And Hindus talk about piercing the veil of illusion. This is what they're talking about. It's a sudden shift of perspective that anyone can have. That's what happens within a mystical experience, for example. The experience is the actual shift of perception, or the opening up of perception, which is also the opening up of a mind, because once you can see from two perspectives, you're challenged in each and every situation, two or more perspectives, I should say, you're challenged as to what vocabulary to use, what map are you going to use to talk about whatever you're focused on at the moment. You're in a huge, let's use space, of free choice and also responsibility for the words you choose, the emotions you feel, the actions that you take. And you are in choice and in responsibility in each and every moment. That can be really scary and challenging. A lot of people don't want to step into that personal responsibility, but it is also the spiritual path. You don't get to a place of pure peace and groundedness and integrity in each and every moment without going through and living all these different maps and living from many different perspectives. Then you get it at a really deep level. Going back, and we're using the optical illusion, that specific optical illusion, it would work with others as well, but of the old hag and the young woman. If you see the old hag, you're going to have very different emotions, particularly as a man, from the emotions you might have if you see the beautiful young woman. So that your choice of, and it's really stepping into your own power, what are you going to choose? What are you going to choose to focus on? And then how is that going to make you feel? And do you want to feel dragged down and fatigued and having no energy? Or do you want to feel energetic, enthusiastic, excited about life and passionate about whatever you're doing? So that if you start with your own personal well-being, and you work on that. If everyone in this world were simply to work on their own personal well-being, we would have an exciting, dynamic, co-creative universe.
Very good.
Needs would be met.
Yeah. Dr. Janet Smith Warfield is the voice you're hearing. Frank McKay here with the good doctor. And, you know, you put things in perspective. And you have a very nice way of teaching without seeming like you're teaching. And you've gathered a lot of information in your life from so many different sources. And how long is this? I mean, is this a lifelong process, or was there a point in your existence where you had an aha moment and said, you know what, let me start picking up things? But, and we've discussed this, that our parents were at the mercy of what they knew and basically shackled by what their society had taught them. So we can't expect our folks and the generations before, as great as they were and as wonderful and well-meaning as they were, we can't expect them to be, and it almost sounds condescending if I say enlightened, but we can't expect them to be as enlightened as we are now. And I know we say these thoughts go back 1,000 years, 2,000 years and beyond, that these are universal thoughts, but they weren't put into the mainstream in the 50s and the 60s. And, you know, late 60s, early 70s, people started waking up to this, and they started thinking about Eastern philosophy and different thoughts. And, you know, more of a universal, not an us against them mentality, but a more universal, hey, look, let's talk about love. Let's talk about peace. Let's talk about understanding each other's cultures and each other's beliefs. And let's stop judging. And that is in mainstream society. And I could just go by what I see on TV and everything from, you know, the sitcoms of the 50s and 60s, they were very, very judgmental. They were, you know, they were innocuous in many ways, but they weren't. They made the woman out to be a certain role, and that was the role that they had. They weren't elevating the woman. They weren't talking about anything that could empower, you know, a child's belief. A child is to be seen and not heard. And when they did speak up, you know, quite frankly, they had a lot more freedom of expression than the women did in those 50s and 60s sitcoms. So for women, you know, the golden age seems to be ahead of us, and I should say ahead of women and then a womanhood. But really, in the late 60s, 70s, after the sexual revolution, is when the only time in our history, in American history for sure, that women have been exalted or empowered, and we're still not there. There's still a glass ceiling, you know, that's there. But your thoughts on that? Your thoughts on where we are now, on where women are headed, and where the next generation of women could expect to feel differently and be seen differently?
I'll get to that in a minute, but from while you were speaking, I'd like to go to a more universal metaphor or analogy, which is Plato's cave. Most people are shackled, looking at the shadows. They're looking at other people's words. And when they stop looking at the shadows and they experience the light, then you can use your term enlightened, suddenly they see the world from a totally different perspective. Now, getting back to your specific question about women in this world, yes, women are far better off today than they were 50 or 100 years ago or 200 years ago when they weren't even allowed to work outside the home or own property or vote. And God forbid that a woman should become a lawyer 200 years ago. It just didn't happen. And today, there are a lot of women lawyers. However, and again, it depends on the comparison that you're looking at. Today, you look at what's happening just recently in the United States Senate, where very intelligent, smart, competent women like Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris, I believe her name is.
Barbara Boxer, even Feinstein.
You can tell by listening to these women that they have thoroughly studied their subject. They know their facts. They know their law, and they're able to speak with a great deal of clarity and conviction. And yet, the males in the Senate are trying to shut them up and telling them to be courteous. So women still, it is so challenging for a woman in our society to stand in her own truth and integrity and speak it out loud without being slapped down and criticized and attacked. However, if you look at the historical pattern, and I may have mentioned this before, Jesus was crucified. Socrates was forced to drink hemlock, mm-hmm. a poison, and die. Martin Luther King was assassinated. Gandhi was assassinated. So you have leaders who are capable of standing almost alone in their own truth and integrity, in the specificity of who they are within this larger universal pattern connected to the whole, they get killed. They get attacked. They get brutalized because they are a threat to people who function with a mindset of power over rather than power with. And we need to shift into an aligned and respectful discourse where, yes, each one of us has a different map that we're working with, but at least we listen to one another's maps, and we learn from one another's maps, and we use the parts of another person's maps that are helpful to us, and together we move forward.
I always have been sympathetic to the woman's standpoint. You know, I was raised by a single mother, and my father was, existed for the first 12 years and then disappeared and, that type of thing. And then we reconnected later. But, I always considered myself, to be certainly in sympathy. And I had empathy for others that were doing this, that were being raised by single moms, and the advantages that men have are just unbelievable. It's an unbelievable situation. I owned nightclubs in my early and late 20s, three of them, and I booked nightclubs before that, and you meet a lot of people, and a lot of them are women. A lot of 40% of them, at least, or whatever, 50% all women that come into the club. And I remember understanding that this set of women in the late 80s and 90s, this generation of women, were the first generation to grow up after the sexual revolution. And what that meant, their challenges that they had, is that they got married later than their mothers. They would look to their mothers, and their mothers all got married at 18, 19, 20, 22, 23, and my mother got married at 24, and it was considered old back in the 60s when she got married in 1963 or 1962, whatever it was. She was the latest of her friends. She was the last of her friends to get married at 24, and she was considered old. A lot of her friends said, oh, you're nervous about this? So imagine the women that I knew that were 28 years old and 30 years old being the first generation of women not to get married at such en masse get married. Of course, women, you know, in the past never got married, or women got married later. But those are individuals. I'm talking about the large majority of women, and they would get nervous. And I remember a specific group of friends of mine. They're still friends of mine. I remember them clinking glasses when they were 22 years old, saying, yeah, we'll get married, and they clink glasses. And then somebody said, when we're 50, and they were laughing and having a good time. Every one of those women, I believe, except one, about 4 years later, said to me, what's wrong with me? Why are these guys not marrying me? Why are, you know, like, they're just, they're little boys. They're out there. They're not interested in marrying me. They just wanted to sleep with me, or they just wanted to, they felt used, and they felt, why aren't they marrying me? And they were comparing their ages to their mother's age and when they had gotten married. And it was really a unique time in life. And these are all intelligent, independent, educated women. You know, these aren't, women that were looking to, connect and be taken care of or whatever. These are, you know, all professional. I'm just thinking about them now. All five that were clinking those glasses are all professional women, intelligent women, and doing fine now. But it was a scary moment there. Again, I am speaking to Dr. Janet Smith Warfield, part of a series on her thoughts, and I'm chiming in there, Frank McKay, but more importantly, Dr. Warfield is here with us. Now, what I said about the generation growing up after the sexual revolution, am I on the mark on that? That's a historical moment that hopefully we've got a grasp on now, but that was a scary moment for a lot of women.
Yes, I think you are right on target in your observations. I got married in 1958, before I graduated from college, and my mother had made quite clear to me that I'd better get married by the time I was through college, or my chances of getting married were zilch, and God forbid that I should end up in a laboratory someplace pursuing an interest in science.
Yeah.
Because if I did that, I would be sure to be an old maid, and that was a fate worse than hell. So she culturally and personally directed my intentions in college not toward improving my skills and abilities, but toward finding a husband. And it took me years to be able to step outside and see that this was just her perspective, because I did have so much love and respect for this woman that I would jump off a cliff for her.
Yeah.
Now, another thought I have as you're speaking is that, two more thoughts. One is, first of all, a smart, competent, intelligent, professional woman is threatening to a man because she is not as easily controlled. So that men, I think, tend to look for marital partners who are weaker than they are, because that way they can control the partner's conduct. I don't know where that comes from, whether it's cultural or whether it's just testosterone, but I think it is a factor. What was the other point I was going to make here?
Well, that there is a very good one. I mean, that was a... a lot of that there.
I have it. The other thing is, I think a woman either lives her life through her children as a wife and mother, or she lives her life for who she is and who she can be. And the two don't necessarily align because the focus and the intent is different. So that a professional woman is kind of split. Oh, and one other thought here. If a woman is going to have children, she's got time limits on it. She can only have their children until she's age 45 or 50. Men can generate children forever and ever. So that, you know, a woman is functioning within this limited time period. Is she going to marry or is she not going to marry? And I have a doctor friend, again, a very competent professional woman who never got married. She went to a sperm bank and she artificially inseminated herself and she bore three children, but without a father or a husband. And I don't think that's necessarily good, but it's a choice some intelligent professional women have to make.
I applaud her. I applaud her for doing that. I don't know what the end result is, but
she's got healthy, happy children.
Yeah, so I mean that's terrific. I mean I felt it, and again, we're just about out of time here, but I remember I thought it was very healthy when my mother and her friends, other divorced friends, and they were all left. You know, they were all either cheated on or left by their husbands. I remember them saying, and I thought it was rationalization at the time, but I thought it was a healthy rationalization, that they would say, look, with horses, you know, they mate and then they put the horse out to pasture when they're done with the male, and then the woman, you know, deals with the children, and you got your children and then get the hell out of here. And I thought that was a healthy thought, even if I didn't believe it 100%. But I think your colleague or your friend that went to the sperm bank and got inseminated, I applaud her. I mean, I think that's that's an unbelievable independent move, and she didn't she didn't rely on a relationship or a man to decide her fate and decide the fate of her children. We're just about out of time here. Do you have a closing thought, and not only for today, but a closing general thought? And please give us your book information and your social media and your website information.
I think the closing thought would be it's vital for each and every human being on this planet to stand in their own truth and integrity and create the maps that work for them while respecting the fact that their map is not the only map and they can learn from the maps of other people. If they listen and they treat others respectfully and they use their own words respectfully. As far as where to get my book, wordsculptures.com, Amazon, there's a webinar five of us are doing right now, expandingconsciousnesscollective.com, which is a very exciting model of what our world could be. It's just getting started, but it's attracting a lot of people and a lot of attention. So I would encourage people to check that out as well.
Yeah, and congratulations. I know you're getting all types of offers for additional books and movies and documentaries. And we all look forward to anything that you end up choosing to go into at that point. And again, Dr. Janet Smith Warfield has been our very special guest and just a lovely series. Keep a lookout. Here and again, binge listen. All the shows I believe are evergreen. I don't think we've touched on a subject that won't be relevant 100 years from now, including everything that we discussed today. But Dr. Warfield, thank you very much for sharing your wisdom and just congratulations on the book. And again, for everyone out there, please buy the book. Shift, change your words, change your world. Dr. Warfield, thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much, Frank, too. I really have enjoyed our conversations.
Well, thank you very much, all of you, for listening. And remember, buy this book and follow Dr. Janet Smith Warfield and Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.